wrestling promoter throughout North America. I kick every one of their asses.
Fraud, they're messing with me.
Mr. McMahon, what's your secret? More than any one quality that makes me the successful man that I am, ruthless aggression. So I want to know here tonight, as you stand here on my ring, which one of you has that quality? Who among you has that one single ingredient? Who has enough aggression.
No info for the DEA, federal agents.
North South Connection, welcome back to the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, episode 89, I think. We had a shockingly good pay-per-view we just covered in Vengeance 03 from the SmackDown brand. In case you need a reminder that they do have enough talent in this company to where they can just kind of pull a good show, a great show even out of their ass. Would you agree, Logan?
Oh, yeah, 100%. We had an absolute great show. We have, on SmackDown, we have a pretty good match that kind of plays off of some of the stuff that happened at the pay-per-view. So there is proof that some people in this company can have a great match. But as we get into Raw, we might see that one side's a little more confident, just better talent. I don't really know how it works out. But, yeah, there's definitely a discrepancy.
Yes, in the in-ring, 100%. We'll get to it. It's rough, especially in-ring-wise. But it's an exciting time because we are of course, now officially start the build in earnest to the SummerSlam of SummerSlam 2003, which is one that I know, as I keep saying constantly on this podcast, I remember the main things, but I don't remember every single detail of it. The main thing we'll cover, I'm sure that's going to come up, is the saga of how the main event that we're going to see as quickly was built up before the pay-per-view, and they get to and announce on this show, and how that's going to mutate as the weeks go on. So we'll get through that saga. There was really nothing in the old dirt sheets about it this week. There really wasn't a whole lot going on as far as the news notes, but it's something I'm going to keep an eye on because the only thing that we have from the news is we'll talk about that Triple H gets injured. I believe it is on, was it on this show or the one before? I think it was that last match he got hurt in, maybe. But I think he has some kind of injury here. I don't know. You might have remembered better than me. But I know he gets some kind of injury here. I think maybe that plays into it.
Yeah, he hurts his groin at some point because he switches to the bike shorts fairly quickly after this. The infamous bike shorts that he ends up wearing at SummerSlam and a little past that. But yeah, he has a groin injury of some sort. I wasn't sure when it happened, but yeah, that definitely plays into the reason that Triple H wants the main event changed. But yeah, I'm very surprised that they kind of announced it like right after Vengeance was over, pretty much. And then I'm also shocked that the fact that WWE now in 2024 knows that it changed, why they didn't cut out the fact that they announced. I mean, I guess that's just, you know, editing for unnecessary sake, but I kind of shocked that they didn't go to the lengths of just being like, oh, we don't really need to feature this.
They know it's only nerds like us who are watching anything from 2003, so they don't care about
true.
Us.
I guess yeah. That's true.
They know they're getting our money, so they don't care about what we think.
Fox will complain about it.
True. So we'll get to it because we'll get more into it as we, you know, it comes up in the show. But I think this is where the old, Triple H hashtag Reign of Terror starts to kick back up, because he's been a little low key through the summer. It hasn't been a ton of focus on him. I mean, you've had Evolution, and lately it's been more focused on Orton as they try and build him. But he's kind of been low key through this whole Kane turning into a monster thing. Like, not a lot of big focus on him since Bad Blood, maybe because they didn't have a pay per view. So I feel like they've kind of had him on the back burner. So he's been low key, but as we'll see, it's gonna amp back up as we get into, like you mentioned, the biker shorts era. Not Sturgis biker, but Lance Armstrong.
Like the Tour de France bullshit, yeah.
Lance Armstrong bike. But all right, so let's hop into Raw. So we get the July 28th, 2003 Raw. We are from Colorado Springs. Not a huge arena here. I don't remember exactly what arena they were in, but I know Colorado Springs is more of a smaller place right outside of Denver. So, and it looks like one of these smaller buildings. But Vince opens the show. He's dressed very casual in his kind of pinkish shirt. He had like his flowing short sleeve button down on. But he says he's here to avenge what Kane did to his wife Linda, of course, after he pow drove her, I guess is the past tense of pow drive, on the ramp. He makes it clear, though, that it's not because he's a good husband. It's almost like it's pride. It's not he's a good husband. It's just like his pride hurts, and he's mad that Kane. He thinks that Kane is basically a big pussy for attacking his wife. But it's not because he actually loves his wife. He makes that very clear. He says all hell will break loose. And then we kind of quickly head to the first match. So a pretty quick Vince opening here by Vince opening promo standards. As we're going to see on SmackDown, they could sometimes go much, much longer than this. But he kind of came out in his pink shirt and was straight to the point and said he's going to take care of Kane tonight.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously implied that he was going to be back later in the night at some point. But, pretty quick. And, how they kind of cut him off with Booker T's music who's in the first match, I was kind of shocked by. But, yeah, he's basically here to say he's going to beat Kane's ass pretty much. And he's just going to do it because he wants to, beat somebody's ass. And Kane did something to a family member. So he's gonna do it just because he wants to kick somebody's ass for sure.
Yeah, and I guess it's significant for Vince showing back up on Raw because he's pretty much been more of a SmackDown guy. The last time he showed up was when we had the hiring of the GMs and everything. I think was the last time. Mm-hmm. But like you said, we'll go to our first match. It's going to be a tag match with Booker T and Scott Steiner versus Christian and Test. Two feuds that desperately need to end that have been beaten into the ground, but nothing left to give. You get the hot Booker T start like we usually get on these. The heels take over. Tess literally scurries away whenever Scott Steiner gets in there because he's afraid of him. So Christian has to take the brunt of that. He gets a press slam. Tess finally gets in, comes in and hits his Tess moves like his clotheslines in the corner and whatnot. It breaks down with Steiner tossing everyone around. They kind of go to a break and reset the whole match, which I didn't think was needed for what this match is. I don't think we really needed to do the whole go commercial break where reset. But things break down and Tess ends up kicking Christian by mistake, hits him with a big boot, and that allows Booker T to capitalize and win with the axe kick. So not much here. Totally acceptable tag match, I thought. Not horrible, but like I said in the beginning, these shoes are cooked. And Booker T is supposedly, definitely on Raw, the second biggest champion. He should be doing singles. They should be setting him up for some kind of singles feud or putting some focus on the Intercontinental title, not sticking him in as this tag match where he's kind of an afterthought to the Steiner and Test stuff as always. But two stars to the match because it's perfectly inoffensive, but I need everybody involved in this to move on to other things.
Yeah, I went two stars as well. Yeah, my first note is also this is a mashup of two feuds that won't die. I feel like ever since WrestleMania, Steiner and Test have been somewhat intertwined with each other. It feels like that. It may not have been the case, but they've been together for a while. And, Booker and Christian have been feuding since I think I hopped on this for this recent run. So they've been fighting ever since I've been back on. So, Yeah, they need to split off or pair off with the other one or something else needs to happen. I thought Test kind of oversold everything and was like super like Lex Luger-y and how loud he was at the beginning of the match. Seemed like he was kind of on something, like he had, you know, snorted a line or something before he came to the ring. He seemed like he was extra like over the top. Like you said, Test of course wants none of Steiner. You think as long as this feud has been that they would have had more than like maybe one or two one-on-one matches. Like they're always in tag matches and they almost hardly ever face off really. Cause anytime Steiner is like coherent and can fight back, Test wants none of them. So, I thought Steiner threw some good suplexes. He hits one on Christian where he kind of throws him over the top to the outside. I thought that was really good. Booker always has good fire on the hot tags in these tag matches. And I thought Test looked like even bigger of a doofus than usual as he kind of stalled before he hit the big boot. And it was super long between the time when he stalled and then when he hit it. And he still hits Christian, so he looks like even more of a goof than he usually does. But I thought Booker showed some good fire, and Steiner, like I said, threw some good suplexes, so I'll at least give it a two.
A Test Luger, that's a good pop. Like, Test is like bad, great value Luger, like heel Luger. I kind of like that comp. But
he's pretty much WWE Luger, I'd say. You know, Luger never really achieved much in his WWF run, so that'd probably be a better comp of just his WWF run for sure.
And agree, Booker needs something. They need a. I'm hoping this is maybe one of those things where they're coming off the pay-per-view and they're kind of just in neutral this first week, and maybe they set something up for them. But not hopeful, because they're not good at booking the undercard on Raw at all. So, definitely not hopeful. All right. Now, what you mentioned earlier in the open, Logan, we go to a – we see that there was a press conference in Vegas, because they're obviously near there, and they used this to announce that the SummerSlam main event will be Triple H versus Goldberg for the World Heavyweight title, I should say. And then we see them kind of exchange some generic barbs at each other. Nothing really too memorable, just like normal shit. But this is what you were mentioning, that maybe they would cut this out, like, because it is such a short segment. But yeah, so that's how we start with this. They're really hyping this as like a, you know, just right off the get-go, announce this, do the press conference, like presenting this as like a big, like SummerSlam is like your second biggest show. And this is going to be like your big money match. To be fair, it is for this time frame. I mean, this is a pretty novel matchup. So I kind of get where they're going. I think for 2003, like getting Goldberg, I mean, Triple H is Triple H. I think it's a pretty worthy, like, I think it fits this kind of hype. I could see why they wanted to do that.
Yeah, you know, without the existence of a second company or like a second major company, there's not too many dream matches. And I'm not saying Triple H versus Goldberg is necessarily like anybody's like, oh, I have to see this. But, you know, Triple H is a big star, has been a big star in WWF, WWE for at least, you know, I'd say 4 to 5 years at this point. So, and Goldberg was one of, if not the biggest WCW star at some point. So just the fact that you have like a titan of the WWF versus a former WCW guy that was a huge star. It's a match that you'd want to see. And it's one that, you know, I think would have been awesome if they had been able to pull it off. But obviously, as we'll get to throughout the week's injury and whatever, Triple H's ego or him overthinking himself kind of gets in the way.
Right. Like a true 100% WCW creation, right? Like in huge spot like this in WWE. Yeah, like you said, it's a big deal. And so kind of go with this, they kind of roll right into him in a match, and he can kind of tell how this is going to go. Is this going to be Goldberg versus Stevie Richards? So they give him, you can see they're finally embracing the full, they've delayed it for a while, but they're going full WCW mode with him. They give him the full entrance where he has a security and everything. He comes out, and of course, in WCW mode, he destroys Steven Richards, just absolutely crushes him. Spear, jackhammer. He's toast. I mean, one star, whatever you want to rate it, it's a squash. But the crowd's into it. Like, he doesn't get the this is a very sympathetic Goldberg crowd, so they're feeling it. They're not getting like, he's not getting like any contrarian response from the crowd with this. I thought they were pretty firmly into him.
Yeah, I think Stevie gets like one kick in, and then Goldberg's like, that's enough of that, and wrecks him with a spear, crushes him with a jackhammer. So yeah, one star squash. But yeah, he destroys poor old Stevie. But yeah, the crowd's into him still, so that's always good to see.
And then with this, we get to really what the gist of this is, which is Triple H coming out on the ramp with the boys, with his Evolution buddies. He says, sure, Stevie's a good competitor. Obviously, he's throwing shade at Stevie, saying that he's kind of saying that he's a schmuck. But he says he's not the game. And Goldberg fires back at him and says, you know, the typical, well, why are we waiting until SummerSlam? Let's do this tonight. Triple H says that he calls the shots and it's not going to be tonight. He says Goldberg has a reputation, and it is that reputation that is going to make him a lot of money. So they are going to wait until SummerSlam. I think Flair was doing the line with Test earlier, because Flair is just keyed up here. He just, like, I think Goldberg like looks away or something. He's grabs him like, you better pay attention, you son of a bitch. Well, that chance was like, he just freaks out on him. So Goldberg comes back and says that if Triple H is afraid to face him, then why doesn't Flair? Flair loves this. They have to hold him back. He's ready to run down to the ring and fight Goldberg. Eric runs out. He said, we're not doing this tonight. He is not going to put a big match like Flair versus Goldberg on TV without some time to promote it. So they will do this next week instead. So we kind of ended with that and set up the match between Flair and Goldberg next week. But I didn't think this was like anything amazing or like, you know, ultimately memorable, but I thought it was pretty good. It was straightforward. I thought, you know, it makes sense for Triple H is like, you know, they're doing the Four Horsemen thing, so he always has to bring up the money and all. Like, I want this to be a big money match. Like, if I beat you at SummerSlam, that's a big main event, a big payday for me. That kind of matches Evolution's whole deal they're going with. And I kind of like that maybe it seems to be a route they're going with right now. I think the idea of, like, if Goldberg has to, like, go through Evolution, like, he's got to fight Flair, maybe he has to fight Orton along the way or some form of that. Like, I don't mind that as, like, a trope to build to SummerSlam to get to Triple H. It's, like, a pretty, you know, not the most creative, but I think for Goldberg, that's, like, an effective way to build to this match. As we know, things are going to change, but I think if we take it on the surface, I think that's not, like, the worst idea for a build to this.
No, yeah, I think it's a smart way to go at it. You know, like you said, maybe a slightly lazy, but just, you know, if there's a group, it's an easy way to go. About it, you know, kind of picking off each member as he goes to get to the, you know, big boss at the end or whatever. But yeah, Eric Bischoff, the inspiration for a young Dario Cueto at this point. I need to have a week to promote it so I can make big money next week. So, you know, I obviously get some inspiration from old E. Bischoff here. But yeah, nothing super inspiring here. You know, Triple H, like you said, with the money stuff. You know, the more he can if he can beat Goldberg if when the match happens, he'll make a huge payday because Goldberg's a big star. But obviously, you know, Triple H being the confident guy that he is, doesn't think anybody's on his level because he's the champ, and he believes he'll remain that way.
All right, we are then told that Stone Cold will make his decision tonight as to whether or not he will remain the GM. Despite not being able to beat up all the WWE superstars. We'll see if that's going to change his mind. But next up, here we go. Our boy Matt, that's doing the C-shows. This is right off of that because we are going to get Rico versus Val Venus. So they even mentioned that this stems from Sunday Night Heat. So, you know, it's a Rico and Val Venus match. You get a nice drop kick by Val. He sends Rico to the floor. It's a lot of Rico doing his antics, like, at the beginning. But what I found weird is that, like, they go with the Rico, like, goofiness at the beginning, and then they just kind of settle into, like, a very straightforward back-and-forth, like, five-minute match, like, where Rico is not even really doing the character stuff anymore. They're just kind of having a match. And, I mean, it's all right, but... I thought the fisherman suplex was good by Val Venus. I mean, Val Venus he's not bad. It's just,
yeah.
I don't know. He's playing a 1998 character that's very, very stale. It has the same vibe as like Rikishi on SmackDown, where it seems like this has just kind of passed us by and they're kind of still doing this. But he has the spine buster in the money shot. Yeah, just total filler, honestly, for this. I mean, we're pulling stuff from Sunday Night Heat here, so I went a star and a half on this Logan.
Yeah, it's star and a half for me as well. I feel like Venus was just such an integral part of the TV, you know, earlier in the year with the Morley stuff that, like, you know, him going back to the Val Venus seems like so out of place. Like, he's way out of his era at this point. I mean, I know TV hasn't changed that much and they haven't gone PG or anything like that yet. I mean, they're super far away from that, but he just seems super out of place. He seems so, like, that's so old news at this point. But like you said, he's still a pretty good wrestler. He busts out a rock bottom and a perfect plex back to back. I thought that was interesting. Neither finish him off randomly. I thought that was kind of crazy. But the spine buster and the money shot both look good. But yeah, Rico, you know, starts the match by spanking him. And then he uses his, making him uncomfortable to his advantage. Yeah, Rico's just not. And in this him losing to Val Venus proves that they don't really have anything in the cards for him. I mean, you know, if they had any plans for him, he wins this match. But obviously, I don't really know what they're doing with him at this point because he loses this match. So,
and even with Jackie, like, Jackie tries to help him. And
yeah, is that Jackie?
No, just, like, kicks her away and just still hits his finisher.
Yep. Yeah, so I don't really know the point of this match, but yeah, it wasn't terrible considering the two guys in it. You know, Venus brought his A game, I'd say.
Yeah, I feel like this is like the misuse. Like we said, like, Fowl's talented. Like, to me, this is a guy you can go and, like, he could have, like, a give him and Booker, like, a decent amount of time and let Booker go out there and, like, kind of have a feature match and look good. Like, have a classic kind of intercontinental, you know, defense against a guy like Val Venus who can go in there and give him a good match rather than bury him in some stupid tag match that we don't need.
No, Jake, like, to me, he has to face Christian for the 50th time, don't you know?
Right. This time in a tag match. So. All right. Okay, so we see Eric backstage. He's speaking with some police officers as they prepare for Kane to arrive. He's going to be arriving in the paddy wagon, a police van. And Eric doesn't want them to open it until it's time for him to go and confront Vince because they don't want him to, you know, wreak havoc. This we'll get to it as the saga continues, but it's a weird thing where it's like, why is Eric Bischoff have the authority to, like, tell the police what to do? Because, yeah. I mean, house arrest implies that this was a crime prosecuted by the law, not by the company. So why are the police have to take orders from this guy? Like, I don't know, but we'll get to it later. I think it gets even sillier than this, but it's just, again, I'm not trying to, you know, be logic lord on a wrestling storyline, but it's kind of funny. Like, he arrives in the van, he's like ordering around the police what to do with this, you know, maniac that lit a man on fire. But
yeah, I feel like I only know the existence of the words paddy wagon from wrestling because of this, and because of the SummerSlam 91 jailhouse match. I feel like I'd never heard the term paddy wagon other than in wrestling. I think I've heard it since then. But yeah, that's a word that only exists in the wrestling sphere for me. But yeah, just ridiculous that, yeah, like you said, Bischoff has any authority over these cops. They could do whatever the hell they wanted, but for some reason they listened to him.
Okay, we then head to Chris Jericho's highlight reel, just sort of positioned as our mid-show kind of. We always have kind of like a segment or a match that's featured in the middle of the show, like in the first hour. And so we're getting the highlight reel. It's going to be his guest is Randy Orton. Jericho says he's on a Rocky Mountain high after he tapped out Shawn Michaels. And he says that his guest, just like him, hates HBK. And so, of course, it's Randy Orton. He comes in. He's in the all-black the button down tucked into the slacks here. He pushes the Evolution shirt, the made, paid, and laid, or whatever shirt. He has his black shades on, looking very Evolution-y. Jericho says that the highlight reel shirts have been sold out, so that's why he's not pushing those tonight. And we find a big moment here as we officially, he dubs his finishing move that he's been knocking everybody out with as the RKO. So officially, it is now the RKO, so. Big moment there. Jericho says it was he loved watching him. It was great beating Shawn Michaels, and it was great to see him get dropped with RKO. But he gets a little serious and tells Orton that he didn't need the help. So why did he come down? Why did he feel the need to go in, interfere in this match that Jericho was so obviously going to win anyway? And so Randy's explanation is pretty much just reiterating that he's a legend killer. So, you know, Shawn's the next on his list, et cetera, et cetera. So then Shawn comes out. He says there's no way Jericho could have beat him solo. He had to have this punk come out and help him. He turns to Orton and says everybody thinks there's been a lot of stiffs who have come in and said they would end his career, just like Orton saying, and that he's made a whole lot of money beating up those stiffs his entire career. He says something like, what was it? I'm not, you know, it's, I could have made million. Yeah, he says, like, if I had a nickel for every stiff like you who came in and said they could end my career, I'd be a millionaire. And he says, wait, I am a millionaire. and then he says that he's going to kill Orton's career before it even starts. Jericho interjects, and Shawn tells him to get out the way. He's jealous. He says, we know we'll do – Shawn wants part three, but Jericho says that he doesn't deserve a rematch because he's a sanctimonious son of a bitch. And then, of course, they jump Shawn. He kind of fights him off at the beginning. The numbers catch up. They overwhelm him. And coming in for the save is Kevin Nash. So every week I'm like, is Nash done? And then he pops up again. So he comes out to save his buddy here. And then we find out that Nash is going to challenge Chris Jericho right here tonight, right now. So before we get into the match, what did you think of this this highlight reel, Logan?
Yeah, I will put you at ease. We are in the dying days of Nash, at least. So, but he does last a little bit longer. But yeah, Randy dubs himself the Legend Killer. Talks about names the RKO. So, pretty big segment for Randy here. But yeah, it's always fun in these talking segments that Jericho has where he's going to fit in the sanctimonious son of a bitch part, because no matter what, he always somehow fits it in, even though if it's completely out of nowhere, kind of like it was tonight. But yeah, I mean, you know, Randy puts over that he's started to, you know, take out some legends, and he's going to continue that way by challenging Shawn and trying to take him out for good, kind of like he did Foley. So good Orton segment. Shawn, you know, played his part, did good. And then, yeah, Nash popping up and being the savior for Shawn definitely seemed like an interesting way to go. But obviously we get this next match that we'll talk about.
Look, it's for life, Logan. For life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was impressed with we've said it as we've been going through, but I was impressed with Orton on the mic. Like, he's not – I mean, he's not, like, amazing or, like – and he's not really a guy that you really think of as, like, when people are talking about, like, great talkers. You don't think of Randy Orton, I don't think. But I think even real early here, for being as young as he is, I mean, I think he holds his own in these long promos pretty well. Like he's impressed me with how well he can go in there. Like, this is a long segment. I mean, this goes, like, 10 minutes or something, and them going back and forth. And he kind of carries his own, so he's been pretty good in the mic.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive to see how early he got pretty confident. But I think he's got a cockiness to him just in real life, obviously, that I think he just, you know, this is kind of the perfect role for him to be the kind of young, cocky guy in a group that, you know, he probably is out of the league of the two guys that he's in it with. But, you know, I think he fits right in.
Right. Like, not an acting stretch for him.
Yeah. He's just being himself. Actor. Exactly.
Right. He's a natural. Okay, let's get to this match. This is a weird match. So Jericho versus Nash here. Nash lands some strikes, like his, you know, Nash knees. Jericho goes after the leg, and he works his leg over for quite a while. That's like, I was getting shades of, like, I forget which In Your House that is, but the In Your House match with all the leg work, that horrible match with Nash. But was that Bulldog?
He had a really bad match with Bulldog, yeah.
Yeah, shades of that here. Jericho's working hard, though. He's going after the leg. He does a drop kick to it, slams into the post. But, like, Nash is, like, not moving super great here. He's kind of in first gear. He hits the sidewalk slam, and then in a super lame finish, Jericho goes for, like, I guess the Ric Flair low blow, but the ref just sees it and calls a DQ. Like, I just didn't understand. I mean, to me, the match is pointless. They get into like a brawl after where like Jericho gets the chair and then Nash kind of snaps on him and starts beating his ass outside. Jericho even like starts bleeding and everything, but it wasn't a whole lot after that five finish. I don't think the brawl was great enough to save it. And I don't really know what they're going for with this, but I don't get what the need was for the match. If you want to do the brawl, just have them get into it after the highlight reel and brawl outside the ring, because the match just comes off as real lame because they do all this legwork and then we get a stupid low blow DQ finish. Like, I don't get the point. I want a star and a half.
Yeah, I only want a star on it. The match was pretty lame, kind of like you said. Like it even starts during the commercial and we kind of come back and Nash is already kind of wearing him out. Like you said, Jericho goes for the need, kind of, even the odds. Nash hits a pretty awesome sidewalk slam at one point. I thought that was pretty good. But you know, Nash, like you said, seemingly has him dead to rights, but Jericho drops down in slow motion, and hits the low blow right in front of the ref. Didn't even try to hide it. But yeah, Nash really, really beats his ass after the match because Jericho tries to slam his head into the exposed turnbuckle, and then he tries to hit him with a chair, but both of them kind of go back, you know, come back at him, and Nash ends up using that to his advantage and bloodies him up pretty good. But yeah, Nash really beats his ass after this. But like you said, this could have just been like a, you know, Orton and Jericho versus Sean and Nash kind of brawl after the highlight reel. It didn't have to turn into a singles match. So they could have, the four of them could have just kind of brawled a little extra after the highlight reel was over. But I guess they needed to fill some time. So they threw this match together.
All right. We head backstage and we have a very somewhat despondent Rosie here. He's with the Hurricane and he's unsure about this training because he said he was at an event. He was at the airport or something. Is like somebody called him a big piece of shit, of course, because he's a superhero in training. And Hurricane says, not to worry. What does he call him? Young Roosevelt or whatever?
Yeah, Young Roosevelt.
Do not worry. One day you will have her powers just like me. And then he flies away. And then Rosie seems a little bit cheered up, but he still seems a little bit unsure. So there we go. I don't know what else to say about this.
Yeah, and then he tries to fly away himself, and then he realizes that ain't going to happen, and he's, you know, just goes and sits down and gets despondent again. So, yeah, not going well for the shit so far.
All right. The cops have not listened to Eric as they have opened the van to give Kane some air. Eric is furious, and he said, this is where it really gets it, where he starts chewing out the cops and saying, like, this is up to Vince McMahon. This is what like Vince wants you to do. So Vince said not to open it, so you're not to open it. Like, okay, are these cops or are these private security hired by WWE? Because, again, why would the cops do what Vince McMahon tells them to do? Like, I don't understand. It's like, like if someone was on, how, like if Jeffrey Dahmer worked for Walgreens and Walgreens was like, he's like, no, you keep them there. Like, no, they would do what they want with them. Like, they're like, no, you got to let them come to work. I don't understand this.
Well, yeah, the whole going to work thing is insane. I mean, I guess they let Dahmer do that. They let him have like a work release, a deal when he was in prison. If we're making that comparison, but
in front of arenas of people, of course.
Oh yeah. He gets to perform. He's not only getting to do his job, but he gets to be on TV every week. So yeah, just a whole ridiculous setup of the whole thing. You know, yeah, like you said with the cops, but just the whole idea of Kane being in jail and letting him come to be on TV and all that kind of stuff is just absurd.
I like the goofiness of the guy. We're just giving him some air.
Yeah, like what the fuck? Like, who gives a shit if he has good hair or whatever? Who cares? But, you know. Just an absurd segment.
All right, we find out from Coach and King that RVD has been diagnosed with a concussion based on the previous events, and that JR is out of the hospital. So he's starting to recover from his being lit on fire. I believe is the injury he was diagnosed with.
Yeah, something was so like. King just says he's convalescing, and he says it so like I don't know. He just, it was like such a put down. He was like, "Oh yeah, JR's just convalescing at home." Like, what a word to use. but you know, I guess that just
we haven't talked about it a bunch, but they're an awkward pairing, King and very rookie coach. It's
coach is pretty poor for sure.
He has like one tone for everything. He can't say like he can announce anything, and he's gonna keep saying that same coach voice no matter what. Mm-hmm. But anyway, okay. All right.
The slight yell, but not quite a yell.
he right, like everything. King's trolling him constantly, and yeah, they're awkward together. But we go to another Sunday Night Heat match. This is going to be La Resistance or Tag Team Champions versus Jindrak and Lance Cade. We get the Dudley Boys on commentary, and this is another, like I said, a Heat match because this was built on that show where, get this, your Tag Team Champions were pinned in a non-title match on Heat by Jindrak and Cade. So that shows about what they think of the current Tag Team Champions, that they're getting pinned on Heat non-title against, you know, these people we have never seen before. But the Dudley Boys on commentary don't get a whole lot in. It's just them talking about how much they love America and that they're better than La Resistance and they're going to, you know, stand up for the American way or whatever. To me, Cade and Jindrak felt very much like an early 90s WCW team, like a generic one. Like something you guys have covered on 7 Months of Danger. That I'm not going to say they were as bad as the Firebreaker Chip.
The Patriots. Yeah.
Yes, they don't have like they're not that bad, but it has that kind of energy. Like it's just like two good-looking guys, but with no real gimmick or anything. But they have nice drop kicks. Specifically, Cade is that's pretty much all he does is drop kick this entire match. Like somebody must have told him. His drop kick was good because, man, he is going to the well. He gets hung up on the ropes and the French take over after a little bit of a flurry to start from our faces. They do a lot of tags and do real basic heel offense, punches and chokes and shit. Breaks down as the champs start to draw with the Dudleys. We get some more Jindrak drop kicks. But he walked into a very unimpressive, the double spine buster from the champs, and they end up retaining off of that. But I thought there was not a lot of oomph in that spine buster, especially because they, like, if anything, you're like, okay, y'all need to have a good finisher, but it looked more like a transition move, like just a typical double team move rather than something that would be their finish. Like, I was not super impressed with it, but the challengers had some energy, but this was just kind of like a match that was there, like most of the matches on the show. So I ended up going to, like I said, I like the energy of the rookies.
Yeah, I went to as well. I really thought Cade looked pretty impressive in this. I thought he looked like a hoss. He's just jacked and like he's way bigger than I remember him being in this run at least. He's just a unit of a human being. You know, one of my minor nitpicks of this era is that they don't fucking change the World Tag Team title graphic. During this time, so they still have the old belts on the graphic, but obviously, you know, they have the new titles that La Resistance has, so still haven't changed that. Don't think they do that for a while. It still stays the same for a good bit, and so it'll continue to piss me off as we continue to go through this. Like you said, Jindrak must have gotten somebody in his ear saying, throw as many drop kicks as you possibly can, because he gets tagged in for the first time and hits three in succession, and then he immediately tags out. Dupree misses like a top rope flapjack at one point, and it could have been way worse, but luckily Cade kind of hits the middle rope instead. But yeah, that could have ended up being pretty bad. Dupree and Grenier get on offense at some point, and the match automatically gets more boring at that point. They get the flag that draws the Dudleys to the ring. The Dudleys kind of come to ringside and act like they're going to fight, but they don't really end up doing anything. And then I think they go to commercial break, come back, and then Jindrak gets tagged in again, hits two more drop kicks, and a nice top rope crossbody. I do, and ironically, Cade and Jindrak's tag finisher is Cade like lifting the guy up and Jindrak drop kicking them down. So their finisher is even a drop kick nice move as well. So really going in on that. But yeah, I mean, I think La Resistance like kind of cuts off them hitting on the other guy. And then La Resistance hits their little spinebuster finisher that they do. I think it's the fact that, like, Jindrak is so much bigger than both of them that it's, like, looks a little less impressive. Like, when they hit it on somebody like Spike and they can really, like, you know, throw him to the mat and, like, look dominant over him, I think it kind of looks better. But, like, the fact that Jindrak is so much bigger than they are is kind of ridiculous. But, yeah, then the Dudleys come down and defend America until La Resistance gets the flag and ends up on top.
I'm thinking back, was it Jindrak or Kate throwing all the drop kicks? Am I having natural?
It was Jindrak for sure.
Okay, I thought so. I thought about this after, and I'm like, am I having naturals moment here? Like, I can tell them apart.
I thought Cade looked pretty impressive for it kind of to be his one of his first appearances for sure.
Yeah, like I said, to me, they were the highlight of this match. La Resistance sucks. I mean, going into this whole thing, I remembered them not being great, but I didn't remember they sucked this bad. Like, they're real bad. They suck ass. Like, they're so terrible. They really suck.
No redeeming qualities whatsoever.
No.
Well, the finish is usually pretty cool, but other than that, they get nothing.
And the Dudleys come down to beat them up to pop the crowd, but then Dupree gets the flag and lays them out, so. Yep. Pretty standard stuff. Looks like they're setting us up for a pretty underwhelming match between these, probably at SummerSlam, unfortunately.
Oh, no, we've got a hot opener on our hands, I think.
All right, Kane has finally let out the van, and he's in the shackles, so he's getting ready to confront Vince. But before that, we get our last match of the night, which is going to be randomly Gail Kim versus Molly Holly for the title. And going in, so I was like, okay, at this point in the show, this match is going to go like 30 seconds because there's like 15 minutes left in the show. They're trotting these poor women out there. I'm going to give them like 90 seconds. You know, this is going to get no time. Entrances to pin is going to be like 2 minutes. But, you know, we get into it. Gail tries a rope run again, and Molly tosses her. I thought that was kind of like a nice callback. I don't know if it was intentional, but she had kind of botched that move the last time. So she goes for it again, and they almost played up like Molly has it scouted. Maybe I'm thinking too much of this, but I thought that was good. I thought Molly's bow and arrow submission was pretty good. Gail starts going for some flash pins and roll-ups, but that doesn't work. She goes for a superplex, but gets pushed off the top, and then Molly hits the Molly go around and wins the women's title in this random match. And to me, this was like, it made me bummed out for Gail Kim, because this is clearly them like saying like, hey, it's not working. Like, we've been unimpressed with you, so we're just going to take the title off you immediately. Like, with no hype, you know, it's like in this death slot on Raw right before the main event segment. You know, we didn't even know this. You think it's going to be filler, and then she just loses the title, like, handily. And it sucks for her. I know she's been, you know, having issues, but she's at least, like, a new face, I guess. Like, I kind of understand why they did it, but it's just a bummer. The whole her debuting and being so underwhelming, and then, you know, losing the title like this, the whole thing is kind of a bummer. So, star and a half. Sorry, Gail. And apparently this is the only time she ever wins the title, right?
Yes, because, I mean, yes, she didn't she didn't really even really compete for it that many more times, I don't think. Like, she's pretty thrown to the back burner pretty quickly after this. I believe we'll get into it as we go throughout, but yeah, she's not much for the top of the, you know, they don't do too many women's feuds that aren't, you know, title matches. So if you're not in the title match, you're probably not too featured other than being like the random tag partner of whoever the champion or the challenger is, depending on your, you know, heel or face dynamic. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing's a bummer. Like you said, you know, She probably got faced with an impossible situation of, you know, debuting and winning the belt in her first match. And, you know, she hasn't been the best, but, you know, I think she definitely seems to try hard. I definitely think this is her best performance since she came in. She seemed crisper than she had been. Like, you know, like you said, she had botched a few moves the week before that we kind of called out. But, yeah, I think she was pretty crisp in this one. I thought she looked pretty good. Molly's a good choice to make the transition to. I think Molly had beat her in the tag match the previous week, even though that was more because Trish accidentally hit Kim, because that seemed like maybe where they were going with the title. So it seemed like maybe Kim would win here and they'd do something with Trish and Gail. But yeah, like I said, this was probably Gail's best match so far. Still didn't go very long, so it couldn't have been any great shakes or anything like that. So yeah, like star and a half is probably the rating you could give it. But yeah, it definitely is a bummer that they've obviously somewhat given up on her already. So, but yeah, we'll see where Molly goes going forward with it.
Yeah, put her in a spot to fail, and hey, she failed. What a surprise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Vinnie Mac is here, and he's ready to take on that son of a bitch, Kane. He says he doesn't want to beat him up in the shackles because that would be too easy, so he's gonna wants him to take him off. Again, love how the WWE tells these police what to do. Like, okay, take the shackles off this psychotic man because we told you to. He lit a man on fire, but whatever, we'll still do it. The line that Vince got me with here, he says, "Who the hell do you think you are, you French fried freak?"
And then he calls him Frankenstein. So,
yeah, you French fried freak. To hear someone say that in a serious voice is just. And then, like, he pivots real quick, completely 180s. He seems like he wants to, like, form an alliance with Kane. He's like, but actually, I think we could, maybe we can work this out. But before he can get too far into that, Austin's music hits, he interrupts. He immediately says that he will be staying on as GM, even though I like that he even mocks Linda saying, he's like, even though I can't hit any of the WWE superstars. but even he's mocking Linda's goofy ass. But so he wants Kane to provoke him, so he has a reason to beat him up. So he starts taunting him, calls him a stupid son of a, you stupid son of a bitch, with your stupid eye makeup, with your eye black. Good, awesome. So just hearing him like be pissed off and like trying to egg someone is great. You stupid son of a bitch. But the big return here is the return of Shane O'Mac as he comes out to defend the honor of his mother. His outfit is absurd. It's like this ridiculous poofy silk shirt tucked into his like bootcut jeans. He looks so 2003. Terrible. If we had a fashion award, maybe we should create it for Shane here because this was ridiculous. He goes right at Kane. Vince pulls him off, but Shane decks Vince and goes right back at Kane. He bashes them with a chair. They work their way up to, on top of the ramp, and then he knocks Kane off the stage. Kane's laid out for a minute, but he does a sit-up and starts laughing menacingly. And so we end with that. So it seems now in this, I guess, twist, if you want to call it that, it's kind of sets us up for maybe a Shane and Kane thing. I didn't think the crowd reacted great for Shane. It's not like they were super excited, but I feel like, I mean, as a segment, my most entertaining for me was Austin and Vince between Austin egging on Kane and Vince with his French fried freak nonsense line. I feel like this is where the Kane stuff is like turning because like they built him up as this big monster, like, you know, this maniac monster. And now it's clear the way they're going. It's not to turn him into some dominant heel that's going to crush everyone. It's now going to pivot into like another, you know, McMahon family side quest thing. Like, that's what they use them for. Like, no one's been able to do anything to him but now, you know, Shane comes back and he's the first person that's made Kane look vulnerable since he's turned into this monster. So, to me, that's a bummer. I don't think that's the way you go with this, like, to build him up this much and this is where you're going to go with it. I think it's them, like, as they do sometimes when maybe business is down or they don't know what to do, they always tend to pivot back to McMahon shit. And I think that's what they're doing here.
Yeah. I just don't think they have a ton of depth on Raw. They just don't have anybody. Like, if you don't pair, you know, Kane with Triple H, which is the kind of the reason he doesn't have the mask in the first place. I mean, he can't really go up other than continuing to fight with RVD, which I think we will get back into. I think he obviously has the match with him at SummerSlam we'll get into, but other than him, like, you know, who else does he face? You kind of have to give him one of these, like you said, kind of a McMahon side quest, because I mean, you know, you could put him with Booker and give him the IC title or something like that. But like that just, he seems like he should be going higher or something right. like that. But like,
there's like just, a title, like he wouldn't care about a title.
Yeah, he wouldn't give a shit about, you know, being IC champ at this point. Cause you know, he lost his mask going for the world heavyweight title. So if he's not going for that one, he belts obviously aren't much meaning to him or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, it's just, there's a definite depth issue. Just looking at the matches, that we talked about on this episode, there's definitely a depth problem on Raw without a doubt. Cause they did like, we want Booker to face somebody else, but like, you know, if you don't put him with Kane or, you know, put RVD with Booker or something like that, you can't really match him up with anybody else. There's just not anybody on Raw. Like, I think that's where SmackDown kills them in ring wise. They have so many more talent. They have so much more talent, so much in ring talent that.
And they use their SmackDown. I find you. They use like their role players. They use the Big Show better on SmackDown.
Yeah, that's probably more what I'm trying to get to. I'm not using the words as eloquently as you just put it, but I think they just need to build some depth. Obviously, with the emergence of Randy, he can kind of be in that situation, but yeah, they just need to use Jericho and like continue to use Orton better. Because those are some guys that can probably fill out some of those parts of the card. But like as far as Kane, I just don't know who else he could go after. So as much as Shane's not the most exciting person, maybe he can get some good brawly kind of matches out of him. But we'll see.
All right. Well, that wraps up Raw. I went pretty low on this. I went a 3 out of 10. I thought this was a really sucky Raw. I feel like not a whole lot happened. I mean, we had a couple. I thought the Goldberg Triple H, you know, standoff was pretty good, and the highlight reel was okay. Both of those are okay, but all the matches were pretty bad to decent at best to bad, and just not a whole lot developing. It just felt like a complete nothing show. As the, you know, the start us off on the SummerSlam build, like just felt totally skippable.
Yeah, you know, I feel like Raw had kind of been building lately. I think the Kane stuff had been interesting before. Obviously this week, and I, you know, Shane's a guy that I've always kind of been more interested in than maybe others have been, but yeah, it's definitely a down Raw considering the last few that we had. So I think we actually had a pretty bad one somewhere in the middle there, but two or three out of the last four I'd say have been pretty solid, but this one fell by the wayside for sure. So I'd probably go 3 as well, because like you said, the highlight reel was pretty good, and then the face off with Triple H and Goldberg was pretty all right, but the matches were just terrible. To you know, what kind of one guy performances? You know, Cade was pretty good in that one tag match, and then Booker was pretty good in the other. But other than that, it was pretty poor.
All right, we had the SmackDown. See how they follow up Vengeance. So this would be the July 31st, 03. I believe we're still in Colorado Springs. So a double shot for Colorado Springs this week. Kurt comes out to celebrate his big victory at Vengeance, recapturing the title. Just some pretty straightforward, like him talking about Grady's stuff, bragging. And then Brock comes out to speak with him. He gets into, he said Kurt so many times. I mean, like, we make fun of it, but this promo, he's like, I was there for you, Kurt. I was going to challenge you. Who was there when you were hurt, Kurt? Like, just Kurt, like, over and over
again. I was there for you, Kurt.
Right, just him talking about how he's, you know, they're BFFs, and, I don't even get his point, honestly, what he's talking about. Like, was Dangle going to not win because, you know, because they're buds? It makes no sense, but Vince comes out here and he starts rambling at first about I don't know what, but then he finally gets to the point about that Brock isn't going to get the title shot, but tonight he's going to set up there's going to be a tag team match against opponents that he chooses to test their friendship, and we kind of end the segment on that. But I went through it pretty fast, but this was like a 15-minute long segment. And the reason I have nothing to say is because I feel like nobody really in here said all that much. Like, Kurt just bragged for a few minutes. Then Brock came out and kind of was confronting about, like, hey, we're pals. you know, you need to give me a rematch. And then Vince came out and vetoed that and said he was going to set up a tag match. But they just kind of dragged it out with a lot of rambling for a while. And I kind of thought this was boring. This is what I'm saying. Like, Vince can come out and ramble. This is like the opposite of the Raw. Raw, he got to the point. This one, he was just going on and on about nonsense. And, yeah, I thought this was kind of a weak opening.
Yeah, you know, Kurt's just talking about how he's lucky to be there. You know, the neck injury really could have taken him out permanently. He's you know, happy to be back. Obviously happy to have the opportunity to compete for the championship, let alone win it. So he's really just thanking the fans and being grateful that he's where he's at. And then, you know, like you said, Lesnar comes out, pretty much says nothing other than I want my rematch, and saying Kurt about 500 times. And then, yeah, Vince on SmackDown is just a lunatic. Like, he's an actual lunatic in real life, but he is like, he turns the lunacy up to like 500, on SmackDown for some reason. I feel like he was pretty contained on the opening segment of Raw. At least he kind of turned the lunaticness on in that main event segment, but this dragged pretty bad, and not much was handled other than the main event getting set up.
Right. Fortunately, though, the thing we do get that's great is we get the amazing, the classic SummerSlam little commercial where you have Brock F5ing the shark with Jaws parody.
I didn't remember that he goes back in at the end to F5 a killer whale, because they talk about a killer whale. So I didn't remember that part.
That was great. That was like the highlight of this whole first 20 minutes of SmackDown, was that F5ing the shark and the killer whale. All right. So to follow Vengeance, we're going to get Shelton Benjamin versus Ray. Of course, the champs retain the belt, but kind of just going off of that. So, obviously, these are two guys that can go, as we saw at the pay-per-view. They go with kind of a cat-and-mouse game to start, but Ray ends up eating the post as Shelton finally gets the upper hand. Shelton's all over him. You also have the tag team partners on the outside kind of jockeying, going at each other at different points. A beautiful enziguri by Ray. And these two are just, like, fantastic together. Like, all the high spots that they do, like, I thought that arm breaker that Shelton did, he did like a jumping arm breaker. That was great. He has this submission combination where he does like an arm lock and a headlock together. Just real good stuff. And of course, Ray always has the cool reversals. We get to the finish, which was awesome. So Ray hits the 619. Shelton kind of catches him on the West Coast pop and sort of teases that he's going to powerbomb him. And then Ray is still able to kind of twist as he does on all these moves, and turns it into a roll-up and picks up the win. So I thought it was a really cool, like, a nice little tease that maybe Shelton was going to steal the win. I don't think Shelton lose anything from this, losing to Ray. Ray is the Cruiserweight champion. And they've really built up that the strength of World's Greatest Tag Team is them together. They haven't really proven that they're, you know, single stars or anything like that. So it makes sense that he would lose when he's on his own. So I thought it was a real fun spread. I went 2.5 on it. Just like a good little 5 minutes of energy.
Yeah, I went 2.75. My first note is this may be a matchup of the two quickest and like most athletic guys on the roster of both rosters combined. They're just both so fast and athletic, without a doubt. I thought that throw to the ring post by Shelton to Ray was pretty sick. You know, Ray always does the good sell where he like dives into the mat and slides into the ring post under the bottom rope. I always thought that was pretty cool that's how he's so athletic that he can kind of pull that off. Like you said, Haas pretty much immediately pays dividends for Benjamin here as he constantly gets involved and kind of trips Ray up. I like that Ray kind of gains back the advantage the way Shelton kind of did early, throwing him into the ring post. I like that they kind of tied that back. I feel really markish when I point this kind of stuff out, but there was like one of those weird jump cuts when Shelton does the back suplex. So I don't know what happened after it happens, Ray's mask is kind of like poofing up at one point. So I think something happened with his mask, because it's like the like strings on his mask are like hanging down after that. But I just noticed one of those weird little jump cuts. So I don't know if his mask fell off or if it just started to come off a little more than he was comfortable with. But I definitely noticed that happening at some point. But, you know, Haas tries to get involved at the end, and Kidman is there to kind of save Ray at that point. And like you said, Ray wins with the big victory roll. He kind of spikes him on it, too. I thought that was really cool. But, yeah, just a really fantastic match after that kind of dudski of a promo to start the show.
Right, we go to Jamie Noble, who's in the hotel room. He's in his drawers and his cowboy boots and his cowboy hat waiting for Tori to show up because, of course, he won the indecent proposal match of Vengeance. Tori opens the door. She wins the female fashion award for 2003 because she has a very 2003, like it's like a tank top with the capris and the flip-flops. Very, very 2003 there. Very like Jessica Simpson or something.
Oh, yeah. Shows are the six objects.
Yes, he's got the fruit, the champagne, the chocolate, his handcuffs. He even has like a Lone Ranger, like Zorro looking mask. And that is all enough to make Tori head to the bathroom to puke. And he says, he just takes it that she's, you go freshen up, baby. And I don't know if this was a dub or something, but I feel like you could barely hear them. It's had to be a dub because audio is so weird. But it has this like horn playing obnoxiously in the back. And it was so like, it was so grating. Like, it was like, I don't know if they, it had to be a dub. He must have been playing like some real song, but God, this horn was driving me insane during this.
Yeah, he must have been blasting some Barry White or something like that, and they had to cut it out. But yeah, just a ridiculous segment. But Noble's so good at this stuff that, you know, he's probably an underappreciated guy to history because he's actually pretty solid in the ring, and then he's very good at the character that he plays here for sure.
Freshen up, baby.
And it only gets more absurd as we go, so but we'll get into it.
All right, continue on. Chris Benoit comes out, and he's supposed to be facing Rhino tonight, but Rhino comes up on the Tron and starts mocking him. He says that Benoit treated him like a joke. This is one of those things where like they're trying to make, I don't know what he's getting at. Like, I don't know when Benoit treated him like a joke. Maybe I'm missing something, but it just felt like a real generic like gripe that he had that doesn't even make sense where even this happened. But anyway, he says he has a warm-up opponent for Benoit. Since he treated him like a joke, he can, you know, he'll treat him like a joke. And so it is, of course, Nick Dinsmore Doink comes out and gets absolutely beat to hell by Chris Benoit here. Squash City taps him with the cross face, like really beats his ass. He won't release it. And he's just super pissed at this point. And then Rhino comes back and says he's leaving the building, and he does just that on the Tron. So kind of just a tease overall to get Benoit more pissed off at Rhino to, I guess, build to their eventual match. But Squash City, again, the Rhino trying to do anything on the mic and hype this up as anything besides like, hey, we were friends, you betrayed me. Like them trying to go any deeper than that is not really working, because what he's saying, I find, doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, we pointed out that Brock said Kurt about 500 times. Rhino says joke, the word joke about 500 times. So we need to work on our variants of words in these promos on SmackDown here. Maybe that's where they struggle, where Raw maybe is a little tighter and better on the just segment parts of things. But yeah, Rhino didn't make a ton of sense. Like you said, Benoit just beats poor Nick Dinsmore Doink from pillar to post. He just absolutely obliterates him once he realizes Rhino's not coming down. So yeah, just an absolute beatdown.
Okay, we head back to the Marriott with Jamie Noble. But before, he finally seems like he's going to get Tori in bed, but there's a knock at the door. And it's Nydia, and she is in her negligee here, I guess, to try and win Noble back. He says, tonight is about him and Tori. But she jumps his bones, throws him in the bed, and off screen we can hear that they are starting to do vile things to each other. And so they kind of show Tori's reaction, and she's kind of disgusted, but she can't look away. Like, she's intrigued by them banging or whatever the hell they're supposed to be doing. So they kind of show, like, she's, I guess, like, curious is the best word I can use.
Yeah, she's, like, disgusted, but she's also, like, kind of into it at the same time. It's very weird. And it only gets weirder as we go as well, kind of like I said earlier. But, yeah, Nydia definitely wins Jamie Noble back over a little bit here.
They've developed that if you get Tori in a hotel room in a weird situation, that anything can happen. So.
And she's guaranteed to make weird faces at some point because she kind of with Dawn as well.
We see that Kurt reveals to Brock that he they're having one of their little buddy-buddy segments backstage. But he pretty much reveals that he dissuaded Vince from making a rematch. So Brock is pissed about that, I guess.
This didn't make any sense either, kind of to tie to the rest of the promos throughout the night. Like, why is Kurt, obviously, I don't know. He cares about his health, but, like, he also... I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense.
Right, yeah, because they play it up that he doesn't want to fight Brock because he's worried he's going to, like, break his neck or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird. Very I feel like they don't know where to go with this whole, super friends angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think they realize that, and I think we'll get to a quick pivot point before too long. So, that needs to happen, like, ASAP. So,
all right, we are now going to go to Jerry, finally going to look to get his revenge on Eddie after they broke up as tag team partners, where of course Eddie slammed him into the lowrider because he thought that Jerry scuffed it. I like this as Eddie drives down. He's stepping up the game with these. I thought this was a nice ass car he drove down. It was a pretty swank car, but. As he goes to shine like he usually does, Tajiri pops out of the truck and misses him. So I thought this was a really cool start. Very like Tajiri, just to do some, some mysterious crazy shit. But Eddie tries to tell the officials that he's blind, so he can't wrestle. And of course, always there's just like tons of good like irony with this that Eddie gets misted right after he sprayed the wax before. So Kyoto is here. He ain't having that shit. He says he's going to defend the title or he will be stripped of it. Great start with Tajiri as he's just unloading with the kicks, the baseball slide, just letting it rip all over Eddie. Eddie finally hits an axe handle and they kind of reset after that. And then it's Eddie's turn to get his shine. He hits the helo, but then Tajiri kicks Eddie off the top. Eddie gets thrown into the steps. I thought, too, in a good way, I thought this was like a very measured match. Like, despite these guys could obviously go balls to the walls and, like, go at a super fast pace, I thought they were real, like, measured in what they did. Mm-hmm. But I think it also made everything in the match feel like it really mattered. Like, every time they hit these big moves, they're not going at such a breakneck pace where you don't feel it. Like, I think they did a good job, and there's enough heat there where they can kind of – they don't have to be doing a move every second for the crowd to be into it. But when they do, like – this next spot, like Tajiri swings the tide again by doing this excellent, like a beautiful tornado DDT. And they do like a double count. Eddie comes back, hits the verticals. Tajiri's right back at him, hits the tarantula. Eddie finally, as we get down to the final stretch, Eddie sneaks a low blow, but Tajiri ends up missing Kyoto on accident. Eddie, of course, sees this as opportunity. So he gets out on the he goes outside, grabs the belt. I love all the little, like, sneakiness of Eddie, too. It's so good for his character. Like, he doesn't just run in the ring with the belt because the referee's knocked out. He still does the deal where he, like, waits on the apron for Tajiri to come and, like, sneaks the belt shot in on the apron. Like, I like all those little details. He gets some water and goes and washes out Kyoto's eyes from the mist, hits the frog splash, and retains his title and picks up the win. And I like this, too. Again, another fun detail is, like, right after he gets the win, he looks at Kyoto, who's, like, still selling the mist, and he's, like, doing this thing, like, I told you so, man, this guy's crazy, he missed everybody, like, I told you shouldn't have started the match, I thought you know what I was going through, so it's just such a good, like, throwing it back in Kyoto's face, but awesome match, I went 3.5, I thought this was a real awesome, really good TV match, there was good heat there from, the turn, and I just like the way they paced this, like, they could have went balls to the wall, but it's, like, they kind of let this breathe a little bit, and I thought it made the spots and it built to the finish really well.
Yeah, I went 3.5 as well. I love this match. This is another one that kind of gets started during the commercial, but Jerry's just absolutely wearing Eddie out to start things. Towards the beginning of the match, the ref really screws Tajiri. Tajiri's kind of kicking his ass, and he kind of holds him back, and it kind of allows Eddie to get the eye poke in. So bad reffing by Kyoto early in this one. Tajiri really nails a ton of sick kicks in this match, without a doubt. I think Tajiri gets the wind knocked out of him at one point because he kind of paces around the ring like real randomly. But I think he was just like catching his breath, but it seems real random that he's kind of just walking around and chilling out on the outside. But, he obviously got hit with something and he was kind of recovering. So there was an awesome superplex by Tajiri at one point. These two guys just absolutely beat the crap out of each other. Like you said, it was kind of more measured, than the, you know, breakneck pace that they probably could go at if they wrestled again. But I love that, you know, Eddie continues the whole thing. He cheats with the low blow. The ref gets the mist in his eyes. He uses the belt, and then he still hits the frog splash to kind of hit the exclamation point on the match. But yeah, this is a really, really, really good TV match, between two guys that can absolutely go.
Right. Really good use of like this is what they should be trying to do with the Intercontinental title and Raw. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Tajiri may never be like a main event guy, but they need somebody like him over on Raw to kind of like, you know, buoy that like mid card division, to kind of just help like fill out the depth.
All right, yeah, awesome match. But we continue on. We get the entire Zach down. So he was featured on Confidential, where they did like a more detailed version of the story. We won't get into it as we've kind of, you know, as going through his storylines, we've kind of covered it, but it's really well done. I'll say like the whole thing that did on Confidential, it's extremely sad if you watch it, because it's like talks about him being in the hospital and how like he had friends in the hospital. And obviously, you know, these are, you know, other kids who had major illnesses like cancer and whatnot. And so he talks about like he would have friends at the hospital and like, all of his friends that he knew when he was in the hospital all ended up dying. So he like lost all his friends. It's just heartbreaking shit if you watch this whole piece from Confidential. But we're kind of familiar with this story, so we won't get into every single detail because it's very sad, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at such a young age, you know, you have to deal with so much, like, you know, being at the hospital, dealing with the chemotherapy and all the stuff that you have to do when you have cancer as a child, that, you know, you don't really have those friends at school per se, or even if you do, you don't get to see them as often as you normally would. So you make friends with these kids at the hospital, and, you know, some of them were in. Seems like Zach's case, most of them didn't make it to the other side. So real sad, but very well done, like you said. I did not watch detail for detail just because I was watching it late at night, and I was kind of trying to get through the episode, so I didn't watch every single detail. But like you said, I'm kind of familiar with the story and kind of what he went through. So
it's definitely on from the episode perspective, they're filling time on SmackDown because they literally just replay the whole Confidential segment, which they don't typically do on these.
They don't skip around it yet. Like you said, they play the whole thing.
And so he will have a match, and this is interesting because we'll see, like, what are they going to, now that the whole Vince deal is over, like, where does Zach Gowen go? And so he's going to have a match here. He's going to be facing Shannon Moore, who, of course, has Matt Hardy with him. So Matt Hardy, or Matt Faxer, he loves summer, and he is twice the wrestler that Zach Gowen is.
I wonder if he meant, like, literally the twice the wrestler, because he has, you know, more than one leg.
I feel confident. Anyway, Shannon mocks him to start the match, like hobbles around like he has one leg. So Zach makes him pay with a leg drop kick, I should say, not leg drop. Good spot where I thought where he does the Gallagher suplex into the corner, like kind of like the almost like an exploder kind of suplex into the corner where he hits his leg. But Matt ends up tripping him, so he's kind of fighting all this. He does get he gets a neck breaker and knocks Matt off the apron. But as that's happening, the Matt distraction is too much, and Shannon is able to get a cheap roll up to get the win. But I didn't think, not a bad performance from Gowan. I thought I thought his fire was good. He sells really well. Like, that's something I think he's done consistently since he's been here. It's like, I'm not sure what they're going to do, though. Like, where they even show right here, they're not even willing to let him get a win on Shannon Moore, who is, like, pretty low on the totem pole. So it's like, you can tell by watching this that the company, like, they like the story. And, like, they want to give him a spot, but in their eyes, he has a very low ceiling. Like, how far are they going to push this? But it's still cool to see him get a shot and see him get out here and, get his opportunities. And, of course, Matt is an asshole, so he hits him with a twist of fate after the match. So maybe that'll lead to something. But I went 200, perfectly fine match. And I'm glad Zach Gowan's getting, more matches.
Yeah, I'm glad they definitely still used him, and they're kind of immediately pivoting away from the Vince stuff. Not that it wasn't somewhat entertaining, but the match didn't end up being kind of what we thought it could be, or should have been. But good to see they're still using him. You are right in that the fact that he does lose this match kind of proves that they don't. Not that they don't have stuff for him or have plans for him, but it's not going to be above a certain level. If you're not beating Shannon Moore, then you're probably not going to beat too many other people. Shannon mocks him early. Gowan obviously makes him pay for that. You called out the suplex. He hits like a Northern Light suplex into the corner. I thought that was really sick as well. I think you pointed that out. They trade like swinging neck breakers at one point. Those are both pretty good. Zach always hits a pretty good moonsault. He hits one of those at some point. Moore uses the distraction, obviously gets the roll up win. Like you said, Matt's a dick and takes him out after the match. Obviously setting up something that seemingly will happen between Matt and Zach at some point. They seems like they're gonna have a match, or that's what they're setting up at least.
Right, John Cena comes out next. He cuts a wrap, mainly focuses on his opponent's going to be Orlando Jordan, so he kind of makes a lot of his rap focuses on a lot of jokes about pretty much like Orlando Jordan being like Taker's young boy, like his mentor, but he turns into like a that Taker's molesting him or something, or that having sex with him. That's pretty much the point he's making. But this is like a total squash. I think Orlando Jordan gets like one punch in. Cena's like in full bully mode in here. It's a lot of him like slapping him around and stuff. Very cocky. Finishes him off with the FU, but pretty straightforward squash match. Just to let Cena come out here and do his rap and kind of just pick up a win after the Taker match.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised how dominant he was. Heels don't usually... Unless they're just like a brooding, like a big dominant heel, that they don't usually get these kind of squash matches. They usually sell at least a little bit, but Cena, like you said, I think Jordan gets like one or a series of punches early, but then Cena just kicks his ass the rest of the match. So, but Cena's super aggressive. I think he is taking the loss to heart against Taker at Vengeance, and he even asked for a rematch. And I think at some point that gets set up for next week as we go on throughout the episode. But he really is taking that loss personally, and he wants to get some revenge.
All right, we go back to the hotel room. Tori is downing some champagne while Nydia and Noble finish showering off. They come back and they said, "Now we're ready for you." I don't know how he pronounced it. He's like, "We gonna have us a menage a trois." But then Billy Gunn busts in and Noble starts to backpedal. "I ain't touched her, Billy." But as he does that, he ends up back in the arms of Nydia and they start going back out of the bed. And we see off camera, and then it cuts to Billy and Tori, who, similar to Tori earlier, kind of have this, now they both have the same reaction, like kind of fascinated. They're not sure how to feel about this. So we'll see how this all turns out in a moment.
Yeah, Billy busting in. Yeah, the knight in shining armor coming in to save, and then he didn't even beat up Jamie. But yeah, he has almost the exact same reaction that Tori does, and is like disgusted by what he's seeing, but it's kind of intrigued at the same time. Wonder what they were
kind
doing.
Kind of a good way to not get your ass beat.
Yeah. I wonder what they were doing, because they both kind of like bent their head over and like looked like they like. I would love to see what was happening on the other end.
Well, they've done pretty much everything. They've done everything that two people can do to each other, is what he told us.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. I forgot he mentioned that.
All right. Brock confronts Vince, and he continues the Brock trend of like his promos are basically just like saying the person's name and repeating what they said before. So you want me to earn my way, Vince? You want me to earn the title shot, Vince? So that's kind of like Brock's, you know, when he's talking to people here, that's his cadence. But he suggests that he should beat Vince to earn it. Vince says he won't be intimidated by Brock, but he actually agrees with him and says he'll he'll take him up on that match, but he says to make sure he does not turn his back on his friend Kurt Angle. So, a Vince Brock match on the horizon.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting one to think about. I think they kind of teased it before the pay-per-view, but obviously, I think, again, that one gets set up or announced that it's official in a later segment. So, but yeah, definitely an interesting match to look forward to.
Vince says he needs a lot of cookie jars right now.
He sure does. He's a busy man.
Speaking of fans in the cookie jar, we head back to the hotel for the final time, and hey, Logan, guess what? They just decided to have a big orgy. So they're all in the bed together. They all bang, and they're having a good time. So there you go. Happy ending for everyone.
Yeah, Sean Kidd would be proud of the orgy that they had here on SmackDown with the four of them. So, but yeah, just it. As it went on, it was more obvious that something was going to happen, especially when Billy got involved, that all four of them were going to get after it like cats at some point. Because Tori was pretty drunk. She had drank like the whole bottle of champagne, so she was into pretty much whatever at that point.
Yep. And I think Noble's from West Virginia. So.
No, that is true. Right. So there is that connection.
Right, Sean. Yeah, I think that's Sean. All right, let's head to our main event here. We have Sable out to brag about beating Stephanie and to introduce Vince's team, which I hope you weren't expecting any big surprises on Vince's team, because, hey, guess what? Vince's team is a Big Show and A-Train, so not a huge shocker there. So
yeah, I think Big Show was a layup. It was just a matter of who he teamed him with, but after Vengeance, it seemed pretty obvious that A-Train was going to be the second selection.
So they're going to be facing Brock and Kurt. You know, like, again, these are all perfectly fine. Like, but to me, this is like, these guys are all good. But like, this is like the fifth week straight we've gotten this kind of main event between the handicap matches and the tag matches. Like, so I'm a little burned out on this whole thing of all these different combinations of kind of like the same guys in the same sort of match. So, and the match is kind of what you'd expect. It's very straightforward. It's like the super BFFs, Kurt and Brock, facing on the two big boys, like very almost like a Great Value Twin Towers versus Mega Powers kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Train does a lot of the heavy lifting in this for the heels. He does his shoulder blocks and uses his girth to work over Angle. Then Brock comes in and slams him because he's a beast. Show gets in, does the show stuff, like, you know, throwing some punches and whatnot. Like you said, none of it's bad. It's all done well, but I'm just not that interested in it at this point because I feel like we've seen a lot lately. I did like the hot tag to Brock. Him tossing Train was like super impressive, as always. But, you know, Brock F5 show. But the angle here is that Kurt does a blind tag and goes in and steals the win from his pal, which sets up more conflict between them. And so Brock F5's Kurt. So they're quickly trying to disintegrate this friendship and go to a more straightforward conflict, which, like we said, is probably for the best that they get off this, because it's really kind of been like a wet fart, this whole, like, them being – I mean, the match was great at the pay-per-view, but the storyline has not been super good. So I went 2.5 on this. I may be underrating it. It's just, like I said, I think I'm a little burned out on this. like having the same combination of people in the same sort of match for the last like month.
Yeah, no, I went 2.5 as well. You didn't underrate it at all, I don't think. But yeah, this speaks to the depth problem as well. Like I think we discussed, like I said at the end of Raw, I think there's definitely a depth issue. And it's across both brands. The difference is SmackDown actually uses the depth that they do have effectively, or the guys that they do have, they use them in ways that can, you know, help everybody, and it puts everybody in a good position. So they definitely just, I don't know that they just had like a great crop of guys in the developmental at this point. You know, they started to bring up the Ortons and the Cenas, and they're hitting. Like I said, I think SmackDown uses their depth that they do have a little bit more effectively, but like they're not able to put like a ton of different matchups together. I think that's what's kind of the best thing about the current day product, is they have so many guys that they can throw out, you know, any number of matches on a given week, so they don't have to constantly go back to the same things or like that combination thrown into a tag match. So, but like you said, that we've had Angle and Brock in a tag or a handicap match for at least a month at this point, straight pretty much, it seems. And Big Show seems always to be involved as well. But to the match, my first note is I always thought A-Train wearing the triple stud lip rings was a bold choice. I feel like that's like a busted lip, like every match waiting to happen. So I thought that was a bold choice to always wear those lip rings that he had in. I thought Train was impressive. He's always one of those guys that I've always low-key kind of enjoyed in all of his characters, really. I think he's just he's a hoss, and he uses his power offerings really well. So he's always been like a low-key favorite of mine. Yeah, Lesnar was impressive, kind of chucking both Big Show and A-Train around, considering how big those two guys are. Really impressive. Angle takes a lot of the offense in this one. He hits the Angle Slam kind of out of nowhere to get the tag to Lesnar. But yeah, Lesnar's kind of they really kind of show off his power in this one throughout. And you know, like you said, he obviously kind of hits the F5 on Big Show falling away, so Kurt can come in and or get the tag and come in and get the pin to kind of create a little bit more tension. But that's very much needed. They need to have some like conflict in this rivalry, because like you said, the bromance is not the most interesting way to go with these two guys. But yeah, not the worst match, but definitely just, yeah, like you said, burnout on the idea of this continuing to happen over and over again.
All right. So in the show, Vince comes out after the match and says that his match with Brock, he will accept it, and it's going to be in a steel cage, and the special referee is going to be his friend that he just F5'd, Kurt Angle. So the plot thickens, I guess. And that wraps up SmackDown. I went a 5 out of 10 on this. I think it was buoyed by the in-ring action, because I think the matches were pretty good. But it didn't feel like there was a whole lot happening super interesting angle-wise. A lot of it was just kind of resetting after the pay-per-view. And I'm not super impressed with the main event scene right now with what they're doing, Brock and Kurt. We'll see if maybe they can get it going now that they finally seem to be doing away with them as pals. Maybe we can get into a more earnest feud between these two. So I'm hopeful. But for this week, I had to go the 5.
Yeah, with how good Vengeance was, it's kind of disappointing to come back down to earth. But yeah, 5, like you said, the in-ring action was pretty good to grade at certain points. But the promos and the segments, other than the pretty funny hotel stuff, but most of the segments were just like a lot of the promos didn't make a ton of sense, like the character motivations and stuff like that. But the in-ring was really good, but that can only carry it so far. So definitely interested to kind of see where they pivot with Brock and Angle going forward. But I think next week will be a big show and have a lot of meat to it from what we've had set up so far. So definitely looking forward to the next SmackDown, at least.
It'll be a big show.
Maybe he could take a little bit off. And
Big Show without Big Show. Let's run through, we'll do our awards real quick. Best match to Jerry Addy.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Best show, I think we're both on SmackDown.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, SmackDown could have been a dumpster fire as well, and it still would have been better.
Best moment, I mean, I guess probably the most memorable thing from these shows is Orton, or the most significant is probably Orton calling the, saying his move is RKO, honestly. It's probably like the most important thing that happened on either show.
Yeah, I won't say it was like, I don't say the crowd like super popped up for it, but probably, you know, Shane O'Mac coming back and taking,
yeah, that's what I think that's
knocking Kane off the stage.
Yeah, that's probably the better answer. Let's see, LVP, there wasn't a good LVP. Yeah, there's not a moment heavy, nothing too memorable in these. LVP, I'm going La Resistance. They're champs and they blow.
Yeah, they suck pretty hard. I can't think of anybody else, so I'd probably agree with you on that, because yeah, they're just really bad all the way around.
And my MVP, I'm gonna go with Eddie. He just continues to shine. He was in the best match. His in ring and his character work was on point.
Yeah, I would think about going to Jerry just to be contrarian, but he was also awesome in that match. But Eddie with the character stuff is just on another level right now, so I'll go with Eddie as well.
Yeah, if I was going to go top performers, too, definitely to Jerry. Ray was awesome on these. Not a ton on Raw. I'd probably go Orton just because I'm still impressed by his promo work, just for being a guy that's still that early on. I think Goldberg looked really good, like just coming out and doing the classic Goldberg squash match. I thought he looked really dominant. So, you know, a little bit not the most impressive week as far as standouts. Did you have anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, Booker looked all right in that tag match. I kind of throw him in there, and we'll give the rookie Cade a shout out as well. He did pretty good for his one of his first appearances. So, yeah. Just those couple of guys, but everybody you mentioned is definitely stand up.
So, bit of a flat start to the SummerSlam build, but we'll see if we can pick things up. But what is not flat is all the great content here on the North-South Connection. Logan, what do you have currently going on as we are close to WrestleMania here? Depending on when this drops, maybe post-Mania, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, depending on when it drops, but, you know, every day it seems like, you know, North South Connect is coming out with WrestleMania content. JT and Ryan are doing their match countdown. They're in the top like 15, I think, at this point. So as of when we're recording, so that's coming to an end. I think they're revealing number one on WrestleMania Saturday. So they've been doing a lot of good stuff with that one. A big undertaking that they took on, and they've been doing a great job with that. And then, you know, they're counting down the top 40 WrestleMania performers as well. I've done a couple of those. I did Seth Rollins most recently. Had a ton of fun with that. Did that with Andy. I think he was like number 18, but yeah, he has a very interesting WrestleMania resume, to say the least. But yeah, those are a ton of fun to listen to as well. But as far as content that I have that comes out fairly regularly is Talking Docs with Jenny and Roger, talking about documentaries. We are doing our serial killer season right now. I'm not exactly sure when it drops. It hasn't dropped yet as of this recording, but we did our most recent recording, and it's going to be on Aline Wuornos. They made a movie about her called Monster in 2003. And it was definitely an interest. We've in this serial killer season, we're watching like a movie and the documentary as well. So we watched a monster movie and then a documentary on her as well. So that was an interesting one to get into. And then linking up luchas, we live watched Ultima Lucha. I believe that drops WrestleMania Sunday. So definitely check that out. You can live watch it with us. If you don't have the access to the show, we can definitely send it to you so you can watch along with us. But that was a ton of fun. I think we had a big time doing that. And then over on the PlayStation Nation Wrestling feed, we have Highway to the Impact Zone. We're about to record the Turning Point 2006 episode on that. So just check everything out on North South Connection, PlayStation Nation Wrestling feed. Everybody's doing great stuff and a ton of WrestleMania content as we built to the big show.
Yep. Depending on the straps, to enjoy or hope you enjoyed WrestleMania. I'm sure you will. It's like wrestling Christmas for all of us wrestling nerds. But we'll be back soon, and we'll continue on the trek to SummerSlam 2003 as we dip into August of 2003. So we will see you then. Bye-bye.